Hello and welcome to a breaking news episode of the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice. This episode will talk about sexual assault reform. So if that will upset you, stop listening now, and I will give the number for Lifeline at the end of the episode, as well as now 131114. This episode is recorded during Reconciliation Week on the traditional lands of the Ngunnawal and Ngambri people, and I pay my respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and I note that sovereignty was never ceded. And I ask each of you to have a think about whether there is any action that you can take during this Reconciliation Week. Real action, like supporting an Indigenous business, or writing to your MP to demand better funding for closing the gap. I'm sure that you can all think of things that will help you take and demand action this Reconciliation Week. I'm relying heavily on a press release, though there has been a lot of other reporting since this was put out. It's entitled Consent Law Reform, 25th of May 2021, and it was released by the New South Wales Government, Communities and Justice. You can find it at dcj.newsouthwales.gov.au. So the New South Wales Attorney General, Mark Speakman, has made an announcement that the New South Wales law on sexual assault, and specifically relating to consent, is going to be changed. And this is in response to recommendations made by the New South Wales Law Reform Commission, Report 148. And I've spoken to you in previous episodes of the podcast about those consent law reforms that were being considered. So Mr. Speakman asked the Law Reform Commission of New South Wales to review consent laws in May 2018, and they've made their report. And so the following reforms are going to be drafted into law. So here are the most important ones. A person does not consent to sexual activity unless they said or did something to communicate consent, and an accused person's belief in consent will not be reasonable in the circumstances unless they said or did something to ascertain consent. So breaking that down, there's no consent unless a person says or does something to communicate their consent. And if you're an accused person in court defending yourself against a claim of sexual assault, and you would now be saying, well, I thought they were consenting, a jury looks at whether that belief was reasonable in the circumstances. But now, it won't be reasonable in the circumstances unless you, as the accused person, said or did something to check whether the other person was consenting. So there you go. Obviously, if you're an accused person and your version of events is that there in fact was consent, that's cool, that works, that's really not very different. But if you're just sort of speculating that someone consented, or saying, well, I thought they did, I mean, I guess they did, well, that's not going to be good enough unless you actually said or did something to confirm that with the other person, which is really important. And it really just flows on from the being a good human things that I talked about in my previous episode about consent. Now, there are other groups that suggest that this is not good enough, that the process through the courts for complainants or victims of sexual assault is not going to change, but it is an excellent starting point to make sure that we at least start in sexual encounters from the position of trying to be a reasonable and decent human. At least this is going to start the conversation that really needs to happen between consenting adults. There does need to be talk before sexual encounters occur to make sure that what is going to happen is consented to, and also that needs to be talked during to make sure there still is consent and that everything that's being done is something that's mutually pleasurable to both people. Otherwise, what's the point? So this is just a breaking news podcast. That's all I've got to say, really, except that I'll note that the feed on SBS says that experts who are commenting on this are cautiously optimistic. That's because they're unsure how the laws are going to work in practice. And this is in an article by Eden Gillespie. It's entitled Cautiously Optimistic: Experts Respond to New South Wales Consent Law Reform. So the reason that they're cautiously optimistic is, according to Dr. Julia Quilter, that we just don't know how the impact is going to affect everyone until the laws are tested in courtrooms. So she says, we can get good legislation in place, but it doesn't always mean practices or the operation of the law in courtrooms accord with the ideals that are part of those changes. So I think it's really pretty cool that Mr. Speakman has been really quite explicit in his examples of what you might say before a sexual encounter. He said, the clearest example would be to say, would you like to make love? If party B says yes, that's a clear example. It may not be words. It may be that in response to the question, party B makes a hand gesture, nods, or beckons the other person towards them. Mr. Speakman also emphasised that consent is a process and can be withdrawn at any time. I think it's pretty cool that people who might otherwise be a bit embarrassed to say these things in public are willing to do so to make sure that we all understand what consent is all about. And I don't think it's anything to be embarrassed about, but there has been that sort of, I guess, feeling that it's something taboo or embarrassing or private. And like, obviously it is private, but I don't think it's something that people should be embarrassed to talk about if it's going to help other people. Now, unfortunately, the New South Wales Bar Association has criticised the proposed changes, claiming that they could potentially criminalise consensual sexual relationships, which I think is a bit tricky to understand. Now, he says, the Attorney General's proposals would have the effect that even in situations where a person consents to sexual activity but has not communicated that consent by words or actions at that time, the law would hold that there was no consent. This approach would potentially criminalise many consensual sexual actions. But Dr. Quilter, as noted by the feed, believes that the statement by the New South Wales Bar Association isn't a fair assessment of the proposals. She says there seems to be some sort of suggestion that sexual acts will be criminalised where perhaps the complainant was in fact consenting. I think it's highly unlikely something like that would progress through the criminal justice system if a complainant was consenting. I don't think it's unfair in the areas of sexual relations for people to be communicating about sexual activity. Well, I agree. I hate to disagree with people, particularly in public, but I completely agree. I think it's pretty clear that the law allows you to consent through actions as well as words. I don't think the fear of the New South Wales Bar Association is well-founded, and I say that as a dedicated criminal lawyer who does represent people who are charged with offences where they need to meet the case against them. I just don't see this arising as a particular issue or a particular problem, because the reality is our cases about sexual assaults are very, very often about mistaken consent. So if there's a question about whether consent occurred or not, and it causes a matter to go to court, well, that's already happening today. I'll finish up with some food for thought. The Australian Lawyers Alliance put out a press release on the 25th of May 2021, noting that their belief is that the affirmative consent laws aren't going to make a real difference, or aren't likely to make a real difference to the victim's experience in a criminal sexual assault trial. They think they're important as a symbolic acknowledgement of the importance of consent and help with consent education. But they believe that there is a place for restorative justice processes in dealing with some instances of sexual assault, and that this option would make a real difference to victims of sexual crime. They say a restorative justice framework would provide victims with more choice and power in relation to how the crime is addressed and how they engage with the person that hurt them. They also say the current low reporting and low conviction rate for sexual offences means there needs to be a better way for victims to have their experiences acknowledged and offenders to be held responsible for their actions, but they say affirmative consent laws are not the answer. I think that my view is that affirmative consent laws could be super positive and we simply don't know yet. I agree with the Australian Lawyers Alliance that they are going to be useful as a symbolic acknowledgement and also help with consent education. And also, I strongly agree that a restorative justice framework is likely to be of greater benefit to complainants because people aren't coming forward. I know that one of the reasons they're not coming forward is that they actually may not want the offenders criminally punished in some cases. Some people do, and that is perfectly okay. But some people don't, but they would still like some way to engage with the person who has hurt them so that they can make sure the person understands and also express themselves and have their say about what's happened to them. They may not be able to make a difference to the thinking of the person who has sexually assaulted them, but at least they have the chance to say their own piece. Now, I'm no expert on restorative justice, but I have a very strong interest in it, and I would love to see our parliamentarians and experts that they engage coming up with creative and sensible ways to build restorative justice processes that allow people who are the victims of sexual offences, and I would say probably things like domestic violence offences where complainants are also reluctant to come forward but need help. I would like to see frameworks built so that we can better address these issues, that we can stop these crimes from occurring, and we can protect the people involved in ways that they want to be protected and in ways that empower them as people. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Not Just a Lawyer podcast. As I said, it's a breaking news episode. And I also promised to give you the number for Lifeline at the end of this podcast. If you need to give them a call, please do. Or call or talk to someone who you trust if this has raised any issues for you that are causing you distress. Lifeline's number is 131114. Thank you again for listening. I'm Sarah Avery of Sarah Avery Legal Practice. Look after yourselves.